First recording.
Okay. I have to say, okay, continue. That's my cue. Okay.
All right. I am here. I'm Alex Farah, and I am here with Maya Reed, who is an early educator and the youth commissioner of Hudson, New York. It is March 28th. This interview is being conducted over Zoom. I'm in my apartment in New York. Maya, would you let us know where you are and set the scene?
Sure. So I am Maya Reed, as Alex has noted, and I am in Hudson, New York. I am sitting in my kitchen right now, looking out at the Presbyterian Church two blocks over and the Catskill Mountains that are having snow flurries at the end of March. And yeah, I've just come back from a day where I was out in that weather. It is windy. It did not get above 28 degrees today on March 28th. And I played outside all day. Well, not all day, but the morning for about 2 hours with almost 3-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. And so I'm fine. And I would like to say that I think what has kept me grounded these past few years, and since this is the COVID experience and working with children and families, I feel what has grounded me has been that I've been able to spend my days with children. And see as they are seeing the world, as they are drawn to something, that they are sharing that with me, and I get to be grounded in that. And I think also that is also grounding them, so that we are having grounding experiences together and we're supporting one another in those experiences. And so, yeah. So if I have mental health, it is because of them. and I'm trying to think that, you know, also being able to be outdoors with children. So I would say that nature and children, which I feel they run a parallel in what they are, has also been very grounding and very nurturing and, yeah, medicinal as well for them and for me. And so it has been a priority more than ever in these past 2 years that we just be outside and be guided by how nature presents us, what nature presents us. And the children often see it first. And then we move into our day from that. I feel like it's very hard to think back and remember a lot, but I feel that being able to work with such a small group has also been I feel very fortunate in that because I have a number of colleagues who are either working as teachers in bigger early care settings or as directors, and the way that COVID has hit them and how they have had to really manage that has been very taxing. And I feel that however this is way that I work is has again allowed there to be there has been some level of stability that has been able to exist for me, for the children, for the families. So I'm also very interested in, you know, I always ask questions, and I think I ask questions from this perspective of I have never worked in a larger early care environment. It's something that I am curious about. I feel like I'm sort of drawn to it, and then for some reason I never enter into it. And there are lots of reasons for that. But there's something about the intimacy of having two, three, at the most four children, and that you're creating these relationships as a unit, and then you're able to sort of move as a unit. One of the things that COVID did do this year to me is I had three children that I was working with as a little cohort. And around Christmas, with concerns of Omicron and being able to see families, and around the holidays, one of the children sort of was stepped away from my care. And I was down to two. And that, although it was really sad not to have the three of them, what it allowed me to do with two is every day we would be in my car. That's how we started the day, as I drive them to where we do share care. And I could actually just say, we can go on an adventure today. And so every day it would be like, okay, what shall we do? And we have, there are about three locations that we have been revisiting throughout the winter season and into the spring. And it's almost, it's a sort of a study intensive. And one of the places is actually coming into Hudson. And one of the children is very interested in trains. And so we start off down at the trains, at the station. We have just really, what I feel like the Department of Transportation is my new interest. Like, I think I'm really, 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 I've always loved construction. I've always loved how things work. I've always loved like trains and trucks and things like that. So we start our day going and seeing what's happening down at the Hudson train yard. And there is this very unique situation where we are the Amtrak passenger trains, and those come through 15 minutes apart from one another, the northbound and the southbound. So there's this whole curriculum that develops. It's like, it's almost like mapping through speaking. So we're talking about the trains. Where is that coming from? Where is it going? Oh, there are people. Oh, there's an engine. Oh, what's that sound? Oh, it's metal wheels on rails. Like, just all of these conversations that can happen and questions that can be asked. And then there's also a freight yard. And there are grain trains, and there's an ADM flour mill outside of town, and there's a train track that goes all the way up into town and across and through the park and out to the ADM mill. And so when that's happening, we're getting to watch like the coupling of the trains and the uncoupling. And then the guy who's taking the train cars apart and coupling them to the engine comes over and talks to us, and we learn about his job, and then the engineer is waving, and then we follow them up through town and they wave to us, and we're just learning about, like, and that's the flour mill, and where does the train come in to the flour mill? So it's this exploration of like our community. So, and its hub is the Hudson River, and at the Hudson River we see the barges and the coming in of the trucks with the gravel, and they're loading it onto barges, but where are those trucks going? Out to the quarry. So we follow the trucks out to the quarry. And it's just this mesmerizing way of like, what is our town? And I'm learning so much from it. But I keep checking in, like, you know, and it's their directive, you know, and it's just, and then can we get out? And what are the birds? And there's ice on the river. Oh, the river's going up. Oh, the river's going down. Oh, the river's high. Oh, the river's low. So I'm kind of overwhelmed at the kind of learning that can happen about a place when you can keep revisiting it. And every day is new, and every day presents differently. But it's always rich. and full, you know, and then there are all these other, a couple of other locations that we go to, you know, that where we're seeing and interacting more with nature and with sort of the weather of that day and how, so it just, and then how children then are in their physical bodies too. Like all of these things where we're asking questions and we're seeing and we're learning, we're also in our physical selves. And so that part of development and also, you know, how knowing what our body's physical capabilities are as we come upon like a huge felled tree and we want to start interacting with it physically. And what is our physical capacity, you know? And anyway, it's very alive. And to me, it is also where learning is, like it's available to me and them simultaneously. And I almost feel like there's no age difference. They're very new learners, but I am also as new a learner as they are. And it's kind of as wondrous, possibly to me as it is to them, you know? And I often marvel at the fact of like, why didn't I notice that until now? Why? And I'm like so grateful that I've had the opportunity to. But I feel like I can't do it as well without them. I marvel at them seeing the little things first and showing me. So I feel like the respect that I have for this very young age group grows so tremendously with each day. And the more that I step back and allow them to be in it without interfering and trying to control their situation. And there are days when I'm not as good at it. And I rely on my community of early educators that I meet with throughout the month to just kind of remind me that my job is to just relax and watch and listen and then respond unless they're in danger. So that's sort of what I feel this past 7 months has. I've really asked myself to focus in on them and what their experience needs to be, because I also am aware that they have been separated from socializing in the way that their older siblings had the opportunity to, and that has that impacted them somehow, you know, and that they need to be supported in a way that allows them to, again, just be who they are as they unfold into this world, you know? And in a way, nature is like, it is the safe place, right? If we are in a place that can jeopardize our health, if we're too close to other people, well, the nature is our place to be. So, yeah, I feel like that has been what this past few months has really given me and given the children and also given the families. You know, I feel that being able to share what our days are has been, I would say that the response that I get from the parents who I also work very hard at, not work hard at, but I have a very special relationships with the families and the parents, and being able to communicate what our days are is so important because I think it offers a relief and a reassurance about how their children are doing and what learning and life is for the children, so that comes of this as well. So, yeah.
Has it changed, like, because you're down to two people or two kids? Is that why? And yeah, two questions. All right. Is that why the big change of like communicating with family, going on adventures? And then also, are you going to stay with two moving forward?
Such a very good question. So yes. So there's sort of like that, the three was lovely because so many things can happen amongst the three of them that I get to see, because they were all slightly, one was young, one was middle, one was older. So it was really fascinating to be able to be in that environment. I have to say that one of the things that I have learned about myself is that two is my happy place, because it offers me the opportunity to safely be out in the world. So that third child, and it's not the child, it's the number three, is that how do I make sure that when we're out in the world, that we're safe, like that I can manage three bodies moving excitedly, possibly in different directions, right? And so so I feel like two allows me to do that safely. And I also know that I personally am a one-on-one kind of person. I work much better sort of one-on-one or in small groups. And so for me, this, I almost feel like it's a little bit of a luxury. But yeah, I just think about education and how we can be present for children. And I think a lot about, and I haven't had, again, that experience of really, really working in a school to know what that is. But I there's something about being able to become very close and very knowledgeable both ways, the child of me and creating a very trusting, secure relationship both ways that then allows you to do so many things. And I also like to be out on the world and let the day tell me what it's going to be and be our guide. And then document a lot. So I have over 50,000 photographs on my phone. And it's that being able to then look back and really understand what was today, what did we learn? And then that will help sort of, if there is, like, I'm like, well, I think we need to get back to actually the forest. It's been a long time. So I am informed by the documentation about what are these other things that we're also learning. It's not just about transportation and our urban setting and how things get from one place to another, but it's also about, you know, the buds on the tree, you know, and things like that. How are our seasons progressing and yeah, mushrooms and using sticks to touch the mushrooms. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Did I answer the question?
I think so. Or I'm assuming that, yeah, you might stay with two children moving on.
Yes. So that is my happy place. Mm-hmm. And I feel that it is a little bit of a luxury right now.
before COVID was, it's out of your home? Like your childcare is out of your home, or?
It's not out of my home. It was originally out of the homes of my families. And so we started, everybody would meet at somebody's home, and it would be a couple families' homes that said, I'm happy to have you here all day. And so we'd meet there, or on this day we'd meet here. And that was really wonderful. And then at one point I was being asked to have four children. And I just felt that in a house where there are many rooms and I can't see everybody, that having one space was going to be very important. And one of my families has a situation in a building that they own for their own work, that there was a studio room that was being created for their child. And so that became our a little classroom. And it was really nice because I'd never had that experience of setting up what might be considered a classroom and then an outdoor space as well. And so that has been really great in terms of like, how do you set up a room? You know, how do you watch the children and help them? They help you establish how the room needs to be set up, you know? And then as they grow, one of the things that I've really watched with this group, because I had 3 and 4 year olds in this room. I had never had 1.5 and 2 year olds in this room. So coming in out of COVID, when we started last spring, we put together this little group of three. We came back into this room, and now I had to set it up as a room for much younger children. So it was looking different. And then I was meeting two of these children for the first time in this room. And so I really had to watch them, and then we keep making adjustments. And then as they got older, I kept having to adjust the room as I watched them navigate the room and what was working and what wasn't working. And now they've started readjusting the room. And I'm like, oh, okay. So apparently the kitchen needs to be over on this side. Great. And you just moved it. Fabulous. You know, and it's just really remarkable to see them in a way managing their own space now and feeling like they have, that it is their space. That it's not somebody else's space they come into, that they own it and they feel comfortable moving things around, you know? And I'm really interested in what that is in a human being and how sensitive we are to our environments, beginning from the very beginning. And then as we have agency and as our thinking and our being able to organize space in our minds, and our bodies are now physically, we know that we can physically, there's nothing stopping us. We just do it, we can do it, you know? So I'm just, yeah, I feel like if we gave children, if we understood children as that, and that capable, I really wonder what the world would be like if we really gave children that. Like we don't, like we do in some ways, but they're very isolated from the bigger world. And I think that that's something that I really keep wrestling with, is how does this grown-up world that's so busy sort of let the child in? And let the child also, you know, really have a say, you know, and have, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know how to say that.
I mean, the world doesn't, right? The adult world doesn't.
Yeah. And I think in this country, it's been 9 years ago now that I took myself to Reggio Emilia in Italy and did a study intensive I'd been that's sort of what sort of really prompted me really taking on and understanding myself as an early educator, as opposed to coming in and just taking care of somebody's children, keeping them safe, you know, doing great things with them. I just was like, well, what is this about actually? And so Reggio Emilia was a very important sort of first, you know, I happened upon it and it just really resonated with me. So when I got there, I did so much reading and so much study, and then finally it was like, I think I need to go there. I need to be there. I need to understand this more viscerally. And to go to a community where early childhood education was something that was the community embraced, the municipality embraced, families, like where children were given visibility in a in a city, a small city, was really remarkable. And it was adults holding that space for them. So it was leaders in government holding that space for them. It was teachers, it was families being empowered to hold that space for their children in public spaces. And it was really incredible to see. And I remember coming back saying, well, we live in a small city, like, we should be able to do this. Like, and I know so many people where we're really on the same page around youth and young people and learning, and we're really committed to our communities. And slowly it has really sunk in how culturally different the United States is from other places, and that this is a bigger row to hoe, you know? And I also do realize when I'm out in that sort of in this bigger world of my community, and I'm working with people who don't have early childhood or youth sort of youth lens or that's their world, that if I'm working on a project or I'm at the table and I kind of say, oh yes, in my work with young children, and I kind of feel like it's a little bit, it's not like it's dismissed, but I feel like that does not have any clout. Not that I don't have any clout, but that has no clout. And so it's not heard. It doesn't have the impact that I feel like it should. Like, I'm feeling like, well, if I say this, then it's going to be heard in this way, like that. And I'm like, oh, okay, how can I actually express this? How can I shift it? How can I shift the understanding? And I feel like that is where I am in terms of my work in the adult world, as a person who gets to live daily in the child world as an adult and doesn't see a big difference between the two. but so I feel I'm interested in how do individuals change that? And I know that that's part of also a bigger national conversation since COVID has brought up to the surface that early educators and early education has been so poorly funded and so poorly understood, but is so necessary for so many reasons. I will always say for the child first, but it's for the family, it's for a community, it's for an economy, it's for all of these things. Where is I going with this? I feel like there are a lot of us that are just kind of grappling with how do we make ourselves visible? Because I still feel that even though it came up in COVID, and because of COVID, and it was finally revealed in a bigger way, where people are kind of hearing and beginning to talk about it, I feel like it's kind of abated again. And I see it in also the care, the healthcare system and the elder care system. And I am, here we are again, kind of being pushed again to the side, I would think. That's my feeling. And I don't know if how accurate that is. But I just feel like we've not had a voice. We were beginning to have a platform to have a voice. And I feel like money is so wrapped up in it that it's about grabbing the money as opposed to how are we going to shift policy? How are we going to shift our understanding of the people in our society that are that need the care most? It's the youngest, it's the oldest, it's the ones who are most vulnerable, it's disabilities. And I don't feel that we're being seen. And the talk is happening around it, but again, a deeper understanding so that it can be a culturally held value. That is where I feel like our society lacks the ability, like we're lacking. So I feel like it's a really great challenge, and I also feel like it's a little bit overwhelming. It's a little hopeless. On my bad days, it's like hopeless, and on my good days, I'm like, okay, how could this be said differently? How could it? Yeah. So.
As the commissioner of youth, do you have power to, I'm not sure what that is, but do you have the power to like make decisions in the community to move towards that?
I would say that, so when I read in the charter about the duties of the commissioner, it's a very interesting, slightly maybe dated title and position because it's not really a paid position, but is as youth commissioner, and each of the commissioners are different. So if you read about the DPW commissioner, the DPW commissioner has a lot of things he can do. He actually does have a lot of power. And authority. I would say more authority. He has a lot more authority. I, as youth commissioner, you know, I have to sign off on vouchers and payroll. I have the authority of hiring and firing, but I have a full-time job, you know, so this is then my second full-time job on top of that. And there aren't a lot of other directives in this, and so it's kind of there have intermittently been commissioners and not commissioners, so I'm not stepping into somebody who had laid really groundwork before. They hadn't been commissioner for a few years, and I have been appointed by the mayor, so it's really working, it's sort of being working with the mayor, who, you know, we share those values and understanding of youth. So I have a lot of support from the mayor in this administration, and so does the youth department, and so do all of the youth organizations in the community. And so that is really huge and vital to this. And then it's really getting down on the ground in the time that I have. So my main focus is the youth department, which is a city department. And so that's sort of like my primary dedication. And then I've just been reappointed for a second term, which is a 2-year term. So I did a lot of learning the first 2 terms because there's no handbook And there's a lot to kind of figure out. And this time around, I was like, okay, there are certain things that I personally feel very strongly about. So what are my focuses going to be in this next 2 years that I think I might have a chance at really sort of moving forward to at least another level, if not seeing accomplished. And so parks and playgrounds are of huge interest to me. They're really important in communities, and ours are really sad, you know? And so this year it's been really connecting a lot, like listening in at meetings and hearing if there's somebody on another committee or in the community who has a shared interest. And so right now, in a very strange way, there's this one park in town where everything has come together to actually look at it and say, we're going to take this on as a project. And so it's going to be a public-private project. And so that's just getting off of the ground. And then there are these conversations, and it's part of really a park system in this community. And Hudson is really special because it is urban, but then it also has like woodland around it. So we have these very parks that are really forest, lake, nature spaces. And then we have like these little city pocket parks between buildings and between the street and an alley, you know? And so to me, it offers a really incredible opportunity to be looking at like these as very specific locations, sites, environments, and very special, but also then thinking about how do they kind of link up? Because I know when I get to work with children in Hudson, or I get to bring children to Hudson, like I'm thinking, well, today, what do I feel like? Which park? Like, are we going to go to a playground? Do we want to go to the dig in the sand and be on the lake on a trail? Do we want to be like just right in town? Do we want to be on the river? Like, if we can really think about these, then they offer people a lot of variety, like a lot of options. And at each location, you're really getting the essence of that place and another essence of Hudson. And so, yeah. So again, it's a beginning. So we'll see. It's a lot about funding things. How do you get this funded? And it's also about community engagement. And so that's been really, to me, that's also very exciting, is that everybody that I'm working right now is like, these parks belong to the community. And so what is the community needing and saying about these environments and spaces? So we're just in the beginning of this one project. And apparently, I think we'll probably have at least 100 surveys from the community that have been done in this past month. And I don't know what the data is right now. I don't know what the outcomes are, but I'm very excited to hear. And yeah. So that work, and then just really, you know, the youth department, we have a new director. And so she's just really sort of, you know, supporting her in owning her position and who is she as director, and her assistant director, and how are we creating new positions, and also out of COVID. So, you know, really trying to understand my place of supporting and reminding everybody that we're coming out of COVID. Like, everything, like, no, we are not offering the services that we did. You're right. Because COVID disabled us. And so we are going to take the time, and we are going to step back if we need to, and we're going to create something that will hopefully not be undermined by anything in the future in the way that COVID undermined us, you know. And so that's been really great to be able to be working with the people who are creating that and be supportive and be, more than anything, be supportive, be listening, be asking, what are your thoughts? You know, how are you doing this? I don't feel like I in any way lead that, because that to me is the director's job, but how do I support those people who are creating, heading up, managing those programs and connecting with staff as well, of just always like, you know, thank you so much for everything you're doing. And then things that I really think are very important is ongoing, like how do we give our employees, the staff that are working with the children, professional development. And it's really great because that's a shared priority with the director, is that how do we help them develop in their work? And very often they're young people who will be moving out into the world. So it's not a career job that they have, but how do we support that so that it can support our children better in the community and families, but also then maybe give them something that supports them as they go out into their lives and their work lives. So I feel more than anything, I just sort of move around as a facilitator, maybe a question asker. Oh, how about this? How about that? How about a crosswalk across, you know, and working with some of the aldermen. So yeah, it's interesting. It's a lot.
It sounds really important. The parks, especially like more outdoor spaces, especially hopefully we're going out of COVID, but who knows how long this will be. Like, that sounds amazing. Yeah. We are a little less than 10 minutes before 7. Oh my gosh.
How did we do that?
Is there anything that you wish you had said or that you really want on this recording?
Well, I think that what I would really like to express is my gratitude to Oral History Summer School, to Suzanne, to you, to everyone who is conducting these interviews, to everybody who's participating them, because it just, to have this time to reflect and almost, it's an opportunity to see in a way what one's work has been in these very nice increments. But it's also been this incredible exchange of how are people doing in this field, in other settings, you know, and always a reminder of this is impacting so many people in so many different ways, and that those stories have to be always heard and recognized to keep things in perspective. So I think that's what I would like to say. And thank you, Alex.
Thank you. Okay, I'm gonna stop recording.